This is Loggers and Loudmouths, Conversations Unfiltered.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 11 of Loggers and Loudmouths. Just as a reminder, if you have nothing going on tonight, remember our previous guest, Matt, Dr. Wilkerson, is playing with his band at Ebony and Ivory at, I think it's 6 o'clock. They start at 6 o'clock tonight. So go out and check it out. This is March 30th, so if you do not have anything going on tonight, go out, check it out, and listen to some great music and have some great beer. We've got another fun episode on tap for you today, but before we get to the topics, Tyler, why don't you tell us what we're drinking?
Yeah, well, it's St. Patrick's Day today, so in that kind of spirit, we are drinking a Scottish stout. I know it's not an Irish stout.
The Irish people are a lot mad at you
right
now.
Yeah, I know. We didn't have any dry Irish stout in my fridge, so, you know,
I'm supposed to pour this heavy.
Yeah, pour aggressively. So it's called Inky Barley by Hook Point Brewing Company, and this Scottish stout is dark and rich with chocolate and coffee flavors and a hint of smoke. Typical Irish stouts don't have those smoke notes, but this Scottish ale does. So, the instructions on the can where to crack open.
And normally we drink out of cans, but today we got some glasses. And just to throw a little bit more shade at the Irish, I am drinking out of a Guinness glass, my Scottish beer. Yeah, it pours great. Beautiful head once you get it poured. It actually very closely resembles a good Guinness.
It does, even out of a can, it does kind of give you
the nitro
kind of vibe.
Yeah, I can see it in yours a little better than I got in mine. You poured it harder, I guess.
Yeah. Oh. I almost spilled that all over my laptop.
That's good. That's a great drinker. Yeah, it reminds me, honestly, very much of a Guinness.
Yep. You definitely get that that peat and that smokiness.
Yeah, I definitely get the smokiness.
Which is definitely different than a traditional dry Irish stout. But yeah, Hook Point Brewing Company, it looks like it's located just east of Memphis, Tennessee. So a little bit further away from us than we are typically drinking. But, you know, solid beer. I like it.
Yeah, Collierville, Tennessee. I have not been there, but I'll have to check it out next time I'm over that way. Yeah, good beer. Good choice.
All right, Cam, why don't you kick us off with our serious topic of the
day? All right, so we got two good topics today. The first topic is something, it's kind of my background. My background is health science. It's what I have my degrees in. So I like to talk about this stuff as much as I can, but I didn't want to bore Tyler too much, so we've been saving this one for a little while. But our kind of official serious topic today, and obviously we'll kind of hit some offshoots here, is what are the potential benefits and drawbacks of a universal healthcare system?
Yeah, I think this is a big topic, especially in today's day and age. I think it kind of stems off of the same kind of vein as the universal basic income that we had months ago. But yeah, I mean, There's a lot of countries in the world that implement some kind of basic healthcare system or universal healthcare system.
For sure.
If I'm not mistaken, I think the United States is one of the only countries that really doesn't have
only developed countries. Yeah.
Right.
Most developed countries have some form of it. But before we actually kind of get into pros and cons, we really got to kind of distinguish what is universal healthcare and kind of how it's a lot of people will also compare universal healthcare to like single payer or socialized medicine. And at the end of the day, they are different things. A lot of people use those terms synonymously, and they really shouldn't be. Universal healthcare simply means that everyone is covered, and basically they can do so without detriment to their financial well-being. So you have some sort of medical issue, you can go to a doc and it's not going to bankrupt you. You get cancer and you have to have treatments for the next year and a half, it's not going to completely bankrupt you. The single payer and the socialized medicine, they relate more to paying into a system that's controlled by the government, and then thus obviously is going to be dictated by kind of what the government entities say we should and shouldn't have. And believe it or not, the U.S. does offer some forms of government insurance. Think about the VA. If you think about the VA system, that's a government system, TRICARE, CHIP. But some of the biggest, if you know anybody who's ever had to go to the VA, what's one of the biggest things they always complain about?
Yeah, the quality.
The quality and the wait times. Yeah. I mean, it can sometimes take you 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 12 months to even get in to see a specialist when it comes to things like that. So, yeah, their care is getting paid for, but at what expense? I mean, are they actually being able to utilize it the way they should be? And that's kind of the biggest issue is that they're not able to.
Yeah, and doing a little bit of research on this, I kind of turned to Canada just because they're, you know, they're our neighbors here in the U.S. And I think a lot of people in the U.S. look to them at their system, and those comparisons are made pretty regularly just because of the close proximity. And that was a big thing from a lot of the Canadian people that were making comments online, is that, you know, we do get, you know, free healthcare, but, you know, I have to wait 12 months to do something unless it's some kind of, you know, life saving procedure or something like that. So I think reduced cost healthcare is very appealing, but I do think that there can be some drawbacks, at least in the current environment of the world right now.
Okay. And we'll talk about some of those pros and cons. All right. So just generically, before we kind of get into the pros and cons, do you personally think that universal healthcare should be a basic kind of fundamental human right?
I think healthcare should be a basic human right. Yes.
Yeah. I would tend to agree. I mean, I think I work in healthcare, I teach in healthcare. So I think that everybody deserves the ability without, again, the financial burden to be able to go to a doc when something's wrong.
And I'm not, and I do say that with a caveat. I'm not necessarily of the mindset that it's 100% free. But to your point you brought up earlier, you know, I don't think that, you know, if you're going through cancer treatment and you have this long journey where you might not even make it out of the end of it, you have to then additionally worry about being in $1 million worth of debt the rest of your life.
Or leaving that with your family or whatever it happens,
Because it's like, I kind of looked at this personally, and it's like, okay, if I was in that situation, you kind of got six in one hand, half dozen in the other. It's like, okay, if I don't get this treatment, I'm going to die. But if I do get this treatment, I'm going to be...
I'm financially broke for the rest of my life.
Right, and that affects my family and everything like that. So it's like, you're kind of... I kind of looked at it from a cryptic standpoint. It's like, okay, would I rather die and have my family not have to have this burden? Or do I live and, you know...
Deal
with the repercussions of the American healthcare system.
Yeah.
Which is a really fucked up way of
thinking. It really is. Yeah. That you have to make those decisions. And so many people do on a regular basis. They have to make that decision on whether or not they can afford their healthcare, they can afford their medications and things like that. Whereas other countries don't. So let me give you just kind of brief history. This is not new. Universal healthcare is not more of a socialized medicine. It's really not a new concept. It's been around actually in the U.S. since it was first kind of discussed in the early 1900s. The American Association for Labor Legislation organized their national conference back in 1917, I believe it was, in order to just basically try and figure out how we can start to work on implementing some sort of universal healthcare cost. Obviously, there was oppositions from physicians and the private sectors. Why? Because they get to dictate costs and they get to charge more.
I'm glad you kind of touched on that, because I did have a kind of specific example. I think there was legislation that was put in place that kind of poured some cold water on this. But prior to 2021, there was kind of this, you know, gag clause with pharmacies and insurance companies, where if someone would come up to a pharmacy and needed some kind of prescription drug, you know, if they said, you know, up front that they wanted to use their insurance, the pharmacy was not able to talk to them about any kind of alternative reduced cost solutions. So
they had to use the highest price, whatever it was.
Well, for example, so like you come in and you need some generic medication, whatever prescription generic medication you need. And you're like, all right, I want to use my insurance. It's a $10 copay.
Yeah.
Okay. You just said you wanted to use your insurance and it's going to cost you $10. The pharmacy can't tell you that if in this situation you could have paid out of pocket, the pharmacy could have sold you that same drug for $6.
Gotcha. And prior to 2021, they were legally not allowed to tell you that.
Yeah. I didn't dive a full research project into this, but from what I did read, it looks like after around 2021, the federal government did try to kind of implement some laws to increase the transparency in regards to this.
Yeah, but, and I think our government is realizing that healthcare is a major issue. I think don't quote me on any of this, but in Biden's administration, he's done some things to try to put caps on certain things like insulin prices and things like that. Because we saw the whole thing with that asshole. What was his name? Martin? Whatever his name. Where he was charging like $700 or $1,200 for like a vial of insulin. So I think we are trending in the right direction, but we still got a hell of a long way to go when it comes to making sure everybody can get what they need at a reasonable cost.
And going back to kind of my comment before where I'm saying, you know, I think it should be affordable and fair for everybody. And I really think that the root cause in the whole thing is the insurance companies.
Yeah, of course.
I'm not going to get into my personal thoughts about insurance companies, but I think that is a driving force. And that kind of is kind of presented in the pharmacy story I kind of just told. But what I do like, and I think this kind of can be a bit of a hybrid model in America, I really like what Mark Cuban's doing. So I don't know if you know about this or not.
Vaguely, but yeah, go ahead and tell us.
So just really high level, Mark Cuban kind of is seeing the same things that a lot of Americans are. We're like, this is bullshit. You know, people shouldn't have to pay 400% margins on some basic ass drug.
Oh, you're talking about his website.
Yeah. So he's kind of tried to make a business venture or a company or something where it goes back to transparency, where he's working directly with the pharmaceutical manufacturers. And he's kind of trying to play the middleman with his company to the end consumer and maybe cutting insurance out a little bit. I'm sure you can still use insurance and whatever. But essentially what the gist of it is that, you know, the consumer is paying a fair price for the product that they're purchasing. And what it is, you know, they're putting a flat 15% margin over the price of pharmaceutical drugs so that, you know, okay, the pharmaceutical companies are making, you know, their money, which they should.
Yeah,
you know,
of course, it's a business.
Yeah, they're a business.
And they're still providing a service.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I think a 15% margin over, you know, the cost of a specific drug is a fair price, you know? So, I mean, obviously...
Yeah, nobody's going to get rich off that, but they do still have a business to
right.
run.
Right, and, you know, everybody wins, probably except the insurance companies, which I am not necessarily...
Against.
Yeah. Yeah.
To hell with the insurance company. All right, so just out of curiosity, I pulled it up, and just for anybody who cares, Mark Cuban's website is called Cost Plus Drug Company, just costplusdrugs.com, and I take a statin for cholesterol because thanks genetics.
I thought you told the doctor to go pound sand.
I mean, if I'm being honest, I'm not taking it. I haven't taken it since, but I still receive it because, yeah, well, if there was a way to peddle atorvastatin, on the streets, I might be able to make some money because I got so many bottles of it just piling up. I don't think anybody's out there, hawking atorvastatin though. So yeah, just out of curiosity, I pulled up my dosage and, my normal, prescription, which is a 90 count bottle. It costs, on his website, $7.70. That is a nearly, what it says right here, you're saving $198.40 on your medication by going through them.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's pretty significant for a lot of people. $7.70 for 3 months.
I was going to say, that's probably not a make or break for you, but...
No, but for a lot of people, it could be.
For a lot of people, it is.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And the thing is, I think it affects, like, I feel like the poorest of the poor... They probably get, you know, those government,
of course,
you know, incentives to make sure that they get some medications that they need. But it's that, I think it's that fringe, like, lower class that's, like, just outside of that, you know, poverty
range.
Yeah,
so you're not making too much to get food stamps and Medicare, Medicaid, but you still don't make enough to really make ends meet. So you're kind of low middle class is probably where...
Right.
Yeah.
I'd say that's a pretty... substantial part of the population in regards to percentages, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm
for sure.
At the end of the day, the way I look at it is, you know, we have a system in place in America that people are frustrated with. And I don't necessarily have the correct answer, but I am very much willing to try different things to see if they work better for the people. And I think it kind of goes down the rabbit hole of, you know, what are the agendas of the people actually making the decisions that go into policy?
Yeah. And all right, so let's just kind of, we always like to take a pro-con stance. So let's talk about some of the potential pros of, well, really, I guess this would not be a con of not having access to healthcare is, and we kind of touched on this a little bit already, but delayed diagnosis. So a lot of people will delay going to the doctor. They'll be like, no big deal. I don't have the time to take off of work. And again, that's another issue. We don't have time to take off of work to go to the doctor. That just goes to, did you see, offshoot here, just rambling.
Squirrel,
yeah. Did you see that the new bill Bernie introduced this week?
No, I didn't.
He legit introduced an actual bill to try and get a 4-day or you work week, 32 hours. And anything over 32 hours would, I guess that's when you start going into overtime at this point. Now, we all know that's probably a long shot.
Yeah. Plus, if you're a salaried employee, it probably doesn't count.
No, that's true. Yeah. That would be nice, though. 4 days a week. I would love that.
32-hour work week, I think, is a little low, but I think more and again, offshoot, I don't want to go down to a rabbit hole, but I think, you know, going down to like 4 10-hour work days instead of 5 8-hour work days would be beneficial.
Yeah, if you got that Friday or that Monday off instead.
I'd be on board with that. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, offshoot.
We digress.
Squirrel. So yeah, delayed diagnosis and treatment. That's one of the biggest issues of not having medical care. You just aren't going to go to the doctor. I was actually talking about this in class Thursday. I was teaching my nutrition class, and one of the things that we were discussing is pregnancy, because we're at that chapter. I was telling them stories. Like, I recall, I'm the second oldest of six, so I recall my mom being pregnant 4 times as a child. 3, really. My sister was pretty close. And I don't recall her ever once going to a doctor throughout her pregnancies. And that's because we were pretty poor back then, so she didn't have the financial ability to do so. And a system like that would have given her the rights. And there's tons of things related to the outcome, health outcomes. Now, luckily, we all came out fine.
I was going to say, what kind of, I'd be curious to know what your mom's thought process was during that, because she probably realized she was in circumstances where she couldn't just go to the doctor
She
felt like it.
Yeah.
So I would be curious to know what her process or her mindset was throughout all those pregnancies, because, I mean, I would imagine that it would probably be a little bit nerve-wracking.
Oh, 100%, because you don't ever quite know at that point if your baby's healthy, if your baby's not healthy. Because I remember when we were pregnant with Amos, it was like every week we had to go for a checkup or something. Right. And I don't think that ever happened. So again, that kind of goes back to the point of if everybody has health care, they're probably going to have much. And the research shows us that you will have much better health outcomes over the long term.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, what about... delayed diagnosis, delayed treatment, that's a big one. Let's bring in a con here. So I always like to throw in some cons. The biggest con and the biggest opponents to universal healthcare is obviously the cost, because most countries who do it by taxing. They tax your paycheck. And, I mean, it can be pretty high. I don't have exact numbers, but I've heard maybe up to 30, 35% of your pay is going to go for something like this.
You know, People always complain about raising tax rates, and I think it's a big sticking point in political races. You know, people don't want to hear that this candidate is going to increase your tax rate by X amount. But I personally don't necessarily mind paying taxes if I know that it's going 100%. Towards a system that actually works for the American people.
Yeah.
And myself included, you know, if we're all paying into a system that's efficient and effective and works, and it's better for the community in general, I think a lot of people can swallow that higher tax bill because they are seeing that they are receiving a benefit for that in a system that they funded.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, we're already paying. If you think about it, so I'll just kind of use myself for an example. We have excellent insurance. The school we teach for is owned by Hospital Corporation of America, one of the largest, if not the largest, hospital entity in the U.S. So we have great rates. I pay like $320 a month for literally everything. That's health insurance, eye insurance. That comes out to be, I don't know, maybe 7-8% of my take-home pay. Would it be that big of a burden on me to double that, to go up to 15-20% of my take-home pay?
Probably not, but
For some people it would be.
Some people it would be a huge issue.
Yeah, I get that. But again, yeah, I mean, I can see that, yeah.
But think of it this way, too. It's like, if we did go down this path, you know, you would probably have private insurance kind of be phasing out because it would be a government program, which I'm a little iffy on both of those things. But, you know, just for the sake of argument, you know, you're switching from a private insurance to a, you know, government kind of program. You know, what changes occur? What actual, you know, results do you get from doing that? And is it better for the population?
I mean, the research seems to show so. I'll give you some examples of countries who have who have implemented it. So some of your bigger, so honestly, the best example, you talked about Canada. Canada is a great system. They're doing quite well with theirs. Yeah, it's a pretty high tax burden. And people who live in Canada complain about, hey, you're taxing the bejesus out of me to pay for my health care. But at the end of the day, their tax burden is much less. They also get a month of holiday. Can you imagine just getting a month to take off on holiday every year?
I can't.
And I can't either. I don't even know what I'd do with myself. But no. I mean, that's pretty standard across most European countries, developed countries. We have to nickel and dime our way into PTO in the U.S. Hold another conversation for another day. But the best, honestly, the best probably example of universal healthcare is Japan, because they have a pretty much near universal healthcare system in which over 99% of the population is enrolled in some form of health insurance. We don't see that anywhere else. And a lot of it, there is still employer-based health insurance, but there's also publicly funded programs that are going to take care of the elderly and take care of the unemployed and the people who do not have the financial means to get health insurance. And the government is also, so this is run by the government, they also have caps on out-of-pocket spending. We all know that through our insurance companies, we have supposed caps, but reaching those, one, they're astronomical. In order to have decent insurance rates, you're still going to have to pay out of pocket $2,000-$5,000 to even have good rates. But yeah, Japan is, and I think their policy has been around since the early 60s, and it's worked quite well.
One thing that's interesting is that the population of Japan is roughly about the third of the United States.
Yeah.
So I think that probably does play a little bit Certainly. Into it, and I don't know to what degree, but I would say it's probably easier to implement that with less people than more people.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, it's going to be a little bit easier with the less people you have. But we also have, I mean, the UK has their own, the National Health Service, NHS, same thing, universal healthcare coverage. Australia has another one that's quite good as well. Sweden has one of the better ones out there. France has a decent one. So, I mean, the key is it's been shown not just once, but multiple times that it can work and it can be quite effective if implemented properly. So the question is, why the hell don't we even try?
And that's kind of where I come from. I'm not and like I said before, I'm not necessarily saying that we do it exactly like other countries have, because there's cultural differences.
Of course,
There's a million differences between countries. But if you see a frustration in, you know, your nation, you know, I'm very much of the mindset, let's try different things and see what works. And I understand that's easier said than done, just because, you know, we're generalizing here.
Yeah, of course.
But I want to find the best system for us. So let's see what we can do. Let's change things. And, you know, it's okay to be wrong, as long as you can admit you're wrong.
And as long as you're willing to make changes and like, hey, this doesn't work, can you come back and fix it? Find some other way. And that's the problem, is we're not even willing to try is my biggest issue, because it's been shown to work. So why not give it a shot?
I agree.
All right. So just a quick kind of aside. So there's been a pretty big uptick in, I guess, what we would call medical tourism. So, like, you decide, hey, it costs me, I don't know, let's say you want to get some dental work done, and in the U.S., that's going to cost you, I don't know, $5,000-$10,000. You go to another place, Thailand is big for dental work, so is Mexico and Costa Rica, and you get that done for a fraction of the cost. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just... it just accentuates my point before that our system fundamentally is broken.
Would you try medical tourism? Let's say, for example, you decide. All right, so here's a good example. There's this guy, older guy. I go to the gym and I talk to him most days when I'm there, and he was telling me actually just Friday, a couple days ago, that he's had two heart transplants at this point. And I think he's probably 70, early 70s. And he's like, yeah, my heart's been acting up lately. And he told me, like, the standard kind of timeline on a heart transplant, it's usually 5 to 8-ish years, and then you might have to get another one. But because he's past the age of 70, now they basically told him no. Like, you can't have, if this heart goes, sorry, you're done.
Yeah.
So for him, an option might be medical tourism. Can I go to Canada? Can I go to Mexico, Costa Rica? If my heart's going to fail and the U.S. is not willing to do anything about it, I'm not ready to be done living. Can I go over here and get this done?
Yeah, I think it's very situational. Me personally, at this point in my life, I probably would not do medical tourism.
No, what's your biggest holdup?
the unknown, yeah, I guess. Yeah. But I also think I'm a moderately healthy person at this point in my life, yeah, where I don't have medical issues that, you know, would, you know, dictate my life.
Of course, of course.
So, you know, for me, it's more about a convenience thing. If I need something done and they're willing to do it in the United States, yeah, I'm going to bite the bullet and just do it here. But I see the argument for that individual. If I was that individual, yeah, and, you know,
the U.S. says, hey, we're done giving you hearts.
Right. You know, if I felt that strongly about it, yeah, I would definitely look into that. I'd be a little apprehensive just because of the unknown, and I haven't been to, I've only been outside the United States one time. So, you know, that would be a little bit apprehensive. And when you're talking about, you know, medical, you know, heart transplants,
yeah, of course, that's a major procedure.
That's a big fucking deal in, yeah, the United States, let alone anywhere else in the world. So,
you always question the validity of the doctors. Do they have the actual credentials they're saying they have? I mean, sure, obviously in our country, we have very, very high standards in order to become a medical practitioner. So,
yeah, I don't want Joe Blow, you know.
He's like, I watched this on a YouTube video once. Yeah. I can get that heart, yeah, out of there. That, yeah, aorta, no problem.
I read a book once.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. But I see it. But also, that comes back to, you know, full circle, where when people's backs are against the wall, they're going to do what they have to
of course
do to, you know, keep living.
Yeah. Somebody told me, hey, Cam, you got nothing. We can't do anything for you. I'm going to go somewhere else. I'm going to fly over to Germany, Sweden, somewhere.
I can't remember the exact substance or anything like that, but I think you see a lot of that with, you know, psychedelic therapy as well in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
You know, people travel to, you know, South America
to do these ayahuasca
treatments. And things like that. Yeah.
Because, yeah, that's obviously frowned upon here.
And it, yeah,
goes back, right, to our last episode, but yeah.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, medical tourism, I don't necessarily have a problem with it. Personally, I'd be a little apprehensive, but if your back's against the wall, what are you going to do? An offshoot on that, you see that in Canada and I mentioned the wait times in Canada
that's
for their
true
stuff.
That's true. They'll come down here.
They'll come down here and pay money to get something done now. It's a supply and demand issue.
It is.
Too, you know?
But that's also why our insurance companies, our medical providers, can charge out the ass, because guess, mm-hmm, what? We have the supply, you have the demand, so I can charge you whatever I want.
And that's where I have an ethical issue with it.
So would you be okay, instead of universal healthcare, what if we, instead of saying, hey, everybody gets free healthcare, we just put caps? So our government comes in and says, hey, this is the absolute most you can charge for this procedure, this medication, this, that, whatever it happens to be. Do you think that's a better option?
So caps on procedures and,
yeah, like
drugs.
Prices. Yeah.
Yeah.
If the government actually came in and said, hey, nope, you have to have, I don't know, a tooth pulled. The most you'll pay for this is $125. That's it.
As long as the cap is economically fair, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, like, if you're going to say you need this tooth pulled, it's the cap is $20,000. I have a problem with
that. Well, of course. And I think that's where the government can come in and do some good.
But yeah, if it's open heart surgery and they're like, the cap is $20,000.
Yeah, I'll write you the check tomorrow.
I'll be okay with that. That's, yeah, a lot of money, but
You also have to, there's a lot of expertise and time and stuff that goes into
exactly
that.
So I'm not opposed to it, but you need to be careful with it.
Yeah, it would certainly have to be implemented appropriately, because again, you can't say, hey, $100 for a heart procedure. It's got to be equitable to whatever the procedure happens to be.
Exactly.
All right, so I think that's a fair middle ground.
Like I said, I mean, there.
Yeah, give me your final thoughts.
Yeah, I just want to see something work for the American people, whatever that may be. It could be the exact same as another country. It could be completely different. But I think it needs to be. I think it needs to be fair for all parties involved.
So you think that currently what we have does not work for all people?
Oh, I don't think that's an argument.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Then I agree.
But overall, you know, let's try something different. Let's coexist. That's really what it comes down to. Let's let everyone thrive. Pharmaceutical companies, yeah, make a little bit of money on what you're doing. 100%. You should be compensated for the expertise that you're bringing to the table and the product you produce. But at the same time, I don't want to get bent over at, you know, the bank because I needed a tooth pulled and now I'm got a $30,000 bill or something like that. You know what I mean?
For sure. Okay. Yeah, and ultimately, yeah, I am 100% in agreement that I think we certainly have a long way to go in our country as far as everybody having access to medical care. So we'll see kind of how we can. I don't know. Like I said, it's always a political toy to play with during these election times. So yeah, I'll be curious to see if any of our current candidates try to bring this up. I don't see it with either of our two candidates that we're taking this year. So yeah, we'll kind of take it from there. Yeah, universal healthcare pros certainly seem to outweigh the cons. So we think that if done and implemented properly, there could be some good benefits there.
I agree.
All right, what is our fun topic today?
Yeah, fun topic of the week. If you could travel to any period in time, where would you go and why?
That's a good question. So we initially started this with which decade would you travel to, but then that kind of, I don't know, a decade is just, it's a, such a small time frame.
And honestly, if you've listened to Loggers and Loudmouths in the past, we start off with a topic and we kind of manipulate it as we go. So it's, I'm sure this is going to be no different, but yeah. give me yours.
All right,
I'm sure you have multiple, but give me your first one.
I do have multiple. My first one, the first place that I would like to go, and there's a couple reasons why, is I want to go to the Renaissance time period. So this is a big time period. This is like the 14th to 17th centuries.
Yeah.
Why? Because one, I would be a giant. People there average like 5'5" in height, and I'm only like 5'11", but I'd walk around like a giant, and they would think this man is very healthy. He must be very wealthy. So I was assuming with this question that I get to go as my current self. I don't go.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
Okay, good. So yeah, I'm going to be a giant. I'm going to have all my knowledge of all these things, and I'll go up and tell Leonardo da Vinci that, hey, yeah, that's pretty rudimentary. Why are you doing all this?
You'd be a god.
This stuff is easy. Before long, I'm going to be talking to you across the country on this little cellular device. So yeah, that would be my pick. One, not just because I would be the god per se, but also because that was just a big time in human history. You've got art, literature, science, all that stuff was kind of coming to fruition during that time period. So you would get to see a lot of things that are happening, a lot of things that are being built, lots of stuff happening.
Yeah, you kind of took it as a little different perspective than I did. When I heard this question, I wanted to go back to places to answer unanswered questions.
Okay.
So you gave a pretty broad time period. I'm going to, I think, start off with the same thing. I want to go to ancient Egypt.
Ooh, that would be fun. Okay. You want to see how those pyramids are made.
I want to understand the precision of how they built the pyramids.
Because you still think it's aliens.
No, I don't think... We'll come back to that in this topic, but I want to understand the precision and the engineering of how they actually did this. I want to know how they got the stone from hundreds of miles away to its current location. I want to understand what the purpose of the pyramids were. I got a lot of questions that are unanswered, and I would love to know the answer to them.
That's fair. I like that. Yeah, I can certainly see that.
Do you have additional ones?
So again, the initial question when we were first talking about this was what decade would you go to? So then that kind of left me with like the 1900s. So I think it would be fun to go back to kind of that flapper gangster 1920s era.
I could definitely see you in that era.
I don't know why. I just think it'd be fun. You go back to that time, you got the roaring 20s, lots of economic prosperity, although you have as we know, the Great Depression on the horizon. So I don't want to live. I'm going to stay for a couple of years, and then I'll go back.
Sure.
I don't want to go through the Depression.
I could definitely see you in like a freaking coat suit with a top hat and a cigar and a Tommy gun.
Oh, for sure. I would definitely try and be a gangster. I don't know what I would be successful at it, but I would certainly try and be a gangster.
That's awesome. So if we're going to a specific period, I'm going very, very specific here. I want to go back to September 19th to 20th, 1961, which was the Barney and Betty Hill extraterrestrial encounter.
I knew you were going to bring aliens.
I know. I love.
So you want to be right there and see what happened.
I want to see what happened. Yeah. And obviously there's a million other instances after that, that kind of, you know, are along the same vein that I would love to see too. But this was the kind of one, this was the one that kind of put it on the map.
All right, tell me about this. I've vaguely heard of it, but I don't really remember what happened.
So I really didn't do a lot of research in the exact story, but the gist of it is Betty and Barney Hill were traveling back in the Northeast from a vacation or a honeymoon or something like
Why
that.
Why is it always the Northeast? A little weird up there. They're like the Sasquatches too.
Yeah, but you got a lot of stuff out in the West as well.
That's true.
Yeah, Reno, Nevada and all that crap.
That's true.
Not Reno, but the Nevada desert all that crap. But anyway, Betty and Barney Hill traveling back in the Northeast from a honeymoon or some kind of vacation or something, traveling down the road, they see something in the sky. You know, they kind of pull over, try to figure out what it is. They had binoculars. They kind of look, try to figure out what it is. The craft or whatever you want to say keeps getting closer and closer and closer. You know, Betty and Barney say they witnessed, you know, beings through windows of this ship. And then after that, there was a real memory lapse of what occurred after that. You know, they ended up at home. They didn't really know what happened. I think I read something where their watches didn't work anymore, kind of a thing.
You know what else was really popular in the early 60s?
Drugs. Psychedelics?
Drugs. I wonder if Betty and Barney weren't doing a few shrooms back then.
Listen, yeah, and I'm kind of... listen,
no, listen, I think we can't be the only thing in this entire universe.
No.
It's too large.
And listen, I'm objective. This story sounds fucking insane. But it's very famous. There's a lot of, you know, literature and documentaries and everything that's spun off of this. And, you know, if I go back in time and I sit there and I look at it, I'm like, oh, this was a crock of shit. Then it was a crock of shit.
Or you go back in time and you don't remember either because you go up wherever Betty and Barney went.
That's what I'm saying.
So then you'll never know if it actually happened.
Well, no, I have some foresight. I'm going to put my tinfoil hat on.
Got it.
That protects me. So I'll remember everything.
Of course.
Right.
Okay, good, good, good. And then you can bring us back the real story of what happened to Betty and Barney Hill. All right, I like that. So a specific time period. It would also be awesome to go back to dinosaur times.
Yes.
Just because, I mean, obviously I would want to have some sort of protection, but just to see them. I mean, we see them in museums and the skeletons and things like that, but to actually see them and kind of see how they existed, I think it'd be pretty cool.
That'd be really, really cool. That was on my top three list as
yeah.
well.
I don't know how I would get there and not get eaten by a dinosaur. Maybe they're really friendly. Maybe we've got them all wrong.
Yeah, 100%.
Carnivores.
You weren't
giant
there.
Giant teeth. Yeah. We're making a lot of assumptions about them. So I think that would be fun.
Now, I will say, this whole topic was aimed at going back in the past and, you know, experiencing
That's
different
true.
Things from our past.
I didn't think about it in the future.
If
Do you
I,
have a future one?
I don't have a future one specifically, but I think I would, if I had the choice, I would much rather travel 100 years into the future and see what the world has become than to travel into the past. Because at the end of the day, you know, I'm assuming you travel into the past, you observe some things, you come back, nothing changes.
100 years. And 100 years doesn't sound like a lot, but you think about where we were 100 years ago, we barely had cars.
Well, especially with the age of technology as it is
now.
Yeah,
we're booming.
100 years is a...
That's a lot's going to happen.
It's a lot of change. So I would be more interested in going 100 years in the future and just going around the world and see what is going on and how what we're doing now impacted that.
Yeah, that would be really cool to see. Are we completely ruining our world with climate change? That's another debate topic for another day.
Sure.
So is all the scientists, are they actually correct, or is this just much mumbo jumbo, just part of normal kind of earthly processes? I don't know. It'd be cool to see in 100 years.
It'd be super cool. We need to get the DeLorean, get that bad boy up to
1.21 gigawatts.
Yep.
All right,
go.
We can do that. All right. Do you have any others? I think also if you see my arm, I have a nice samurai tattoo on my arm. I think going back to kind of that time period in Japan would be really cool. Kind of see medieval Japan and see kind of all that samurai kind of lifestyle.
That'd be wild, yeah.
It would be fun. Renaissance would always be good. But yeah, I like the idea of going in the future. If I could go in the future, I don't know how far I would want to go.
I'd want to go far enough.
To see change?
Yeah.
To see significant change?
Yeah. Because, I mean, 100 years, that's one, two people. In the future.
Yeah. That's my, let's see, Amos is almost six. That's probably, he's going to have grandkids that'll be alive in 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even kids, realistically.
Yeah.
I mean, if he, yeah. So yeah, that'd be pretty cool to
see.
That'd
be neat.
All right. So yeah, share your thoughts with us. Which time period or decade or future aid, I don't think that's a word, but which one would you like to go to and why?
Yeah. Also, I do want to shout out Tiff and Tanisha, they have both sent in comments on our podcast streaming service page.
Oh, did they? What did they say?
They're just commenting on the specific episodes that we were recording at the time. But we do appreciate your feedback and your questions.
Yeah, listen, we're just two guys with opinions. We love to hear other opinions, and we are open to all opinions. So share anything with us. I don't care if you like us or if you hate us. If we think we're absolute shit, we can take that. That's fine.
Absolutely. But I think it's a good place to wrap it up. Why don't you start us off with the hot takes of the week, Cam?
All right, hot take of the week. So my hot take of the week, and I've kind of realized the theme with my hot takes is they're more internal messages to myself. So okay. I'm saying them as hot takes, but I feel like it's a way for me to put out into the universe the expectations I have of myself. So my hot take is in life, we need to be more of an active versus a passive participant. So I feel like a lot of times we're eyeballs and we're face and we're brain and we stare at a screen. And that's a passive participant in life, if you ask me. So I feel like we need to make it a point to be more active in life, no matter whatever that looks like for you. I mean, if it's with your family, great. If it's at work, great. If it's hobbies, great. But we spend too much time staring at these screens, which is passively living. And I think we need to do a better job of actively living. So yeah, that's my hot take. And like I said, it's more of a self memo than anything, probably.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, especially in the past year, there's been so many times where I just want to take my cell phone and throw it in a river.
Oh, and when I was thinking about the decades question, I was like, I want to go to a time period where that is not an option. I don't have the cell phone. I don't have that option. I think it would be cool to, because I mean, I got my first cell phone when I was 18, but even then they were around since I was probably 10. So it'd be nice to go to a time period where those didn't exist. And what would life be like then?
No, that's a good hot take. I like it.
All right, what do you got?
My hot take of the week, pretty short and sweet, but I'll elaborate. Support your local businesses.
For sure. Always.
So what does that mean? One of my pet peeves is when, you know, you go to a local business and people bitch, moan, and complain about the pricing and everything like that. Listen, why are you going to that local business? You're not just going to that local business to purchase a product or a service. If you wanted to purchase a product or a service, you'd go to Walmart, you go to any commercial box, just get what you need and go. You're going to a small business for a purpose. You're obviously going for a product or a service, but what is the added value that you're getting from going there? You're getting the personal connections of the people that are employed and work there and own the business. You're getting, you know, the ambiance of the business that they have built around them.
Definitely.
So don't necessarily look at the increased price tag and, you know, complain about it, because there's added value to small business that is kind of, you know, subliminal in a way.
Yep.
You know, there's... Well,
and I always think about, not to interrupt, but I always think about that meme, you've probably seen it before, that when you support a small business, you're paying for the dance lessons or the t-ball for that person's kids. If you buy from Amazon, great. Guess what? That you're another dollar in their hats. No big deal.
Right. And think about this. And this is my opinion, at least. People like to give money to people that they like.
Yep.
You know, we can give money to Walmart all day. They don't give a shit about us.
Nope.
But your barber at the local barbershop, that's a guy that you're making a personal connection with.
Yep.
That money makes a difference to that person.
Yep.
So that's really what my hot take of the week is.
All right. Do you have a specific small business in town you want to shout out? In our area?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Barbershop 2020.
Yeah.
That's where I actually thought about this.
This whole process.
Yeah. I was getting.
I did notice you got a new cut. It was good because you're getting a little shaggy.
Yeah. No, but Barbershop 2020 in Jefferson City. I mean, it's just a small barbershop. It's just a dude's barbershop.
Yeah, there's just four or five guys in there.
Old building, exposed brick. They did it upright. All their, all their barber equipment is in literal toolboxes.
Yeah.
It's just a cool atmosphere. And it's like, all right, yeah, maybe I'll pay a little bit more for a haircut to go there because I like the environment. I like the people there. They do They do a really good job.
Could you go to Great Clips for $8? Definitely. Yeah. But one, it's not going to look as good because Great Clips is shit. But
right.
Two, you're not supporting anybody. You're supporting another just giant corporation then.
And obviously, I'm a bit biased here, but 1907 Brewing Company.
Yeah. I think any of your local breweries, obviously, we like beer. We're lagers and loudmouths. So support your local breweries. Yeah, there's a time and a place for a good Coors banquet, but they've got tons of money. The guys who are just trying to make it at your local breweries, they don't. So support them as much as you can.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm trying to think if I have any small business in town. Other than the breweries, I always support breweries.
That little cigar shop.
Oh, yeah. Cigar shop in town that just opened up in the last year or so. Great cigar shop. I had a cigar last night. It was from them. It was amazing.
Those people there are great.
Good people. And I think that's what you get when you go to a small business is you get to make that connection with people. And that's why you want to support them. You're not, again, Sam Walton's not going to come out and say, hey, thanks for buying this bag of iceberg lettuce from Walmart.
You're paying for an experience as well as a product and a service.
Yeah. All right. I like that. That's a great hot take. All right. Support your local businesses.
I think we wrapped this one up pretty good. Why don't you take us away, Cam?
All right, guys. Yeah, thanks. Please share your favorite local business with us in the comments or send us an email. We're happy to shout you guys out. Also, please tell us which decade time period would you want to go to? Do you want to fight the dinosaurs? Do you want to go see a samurai in Japan? Or maybe you want to go see a Leonardo da Vinci doing all his Leonardo da Vinci things. I think that's what I would pick. Share which time period you want to go to. Tell us why. And we'll catch you on the flip side in episode 12 in a couple of weeks.
Thank you for tuning in to Loggers and Loudmouths. Be sure to never miss an episode by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast streaming service. If you would like to provide feedback or suggest a topic for a future episode, please reach out to us at loggersandloudmouths@gmail.com.